Citizens, colleagues, and friends, Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, and distinguished members of the legislature, thank you for hosting this joint session. Before I get to the matter at hand, I'd like to give special thanks to my wife, First Lady Lori McCallum, for her support and understanding during these demanding times. Lori. See, my advice is you can be at least smart once in your life, and it makes everything else easier thereafter. To Margaret Farrell, a good friend and a great Lieutenant Governor. Margaret. And to the members of the Wisconsin Cabinet, of my Cabinet, whose leadership and resolve will be evident to the rest of Wisconsin in the coming weeks, as they have been to me as I've been governor. Will the Cabinet please stand up so we can acknowledge them? And I say that because they truly have been and will continue to be very good managers. And as I have said a number of times, when times are good, it's easy to manage. These people are doing yeoman's work in difficult circumstances. I come before you today to talk about our economic future and to lay the foundation for a bold and unprecedented initiative that reforms and reshapes the roles of state and local government. Our immediate task is solving a $1.1 billion shortfall, a shortfall brought on by the national recession and the resulting downturn in the Wisconsin economy. Now, while it is of little consolation, there are at least 40 other states that won't meet their budget estimates this year. Legislatures across the country have been forced to react to recession and to domestic security developments. In August, when I signed the bipartisan budget that now must be adjusted, Wisconsin's economy was showing signs of rebounding, and especially in the manufacturing sector. But the cowardly acts of terrorists on September 11th forestalled any realistic chance for recovery at the end of this year. I've been talking and listening with people all across Wisconsin since September 11th. People are concerned about their future, and some are more than a little pessimistic about Madison's ability to fix this problem. This should not be the case. I relate the sentiment because I believe our mission goes beyond the act of balancing a budget. Our decisions will not be about now, but about shaping a better tomorrow for the hardworking families of this state. That's why my plan that you will soon have before you is called the Budget Reform Act of 2002. This debate is not just about a budget. It is about the great people who make up the great state of Wisconsin. Now, people know that government has a role in their lives, but too often they view government as too unmanageable, too ineffective, too costly, and above all, too unaccountable. My Budget Reform Act is about making government less costly, more manageable, more effective, and more accountable. Seldom have the stakes been higher for Wisconsin. What we say and do in the coming weeks will have a direct impact on the lives of hardworking Wisconsinites, from the teacher in La Crosse to the factory worker in Milwaukee, from the logger in Hayward to the nurse in Racine, the waitress in the Fox Valley, the poultry farmer in Barron, the auto worker in Janesville. Our decisions will have a direct impact on the millions of everyday Wisconsinites who have a simple wish of a financially secure future for their children. No one pretends that the road ahead is going to be smooth. These are hard choices, to be sure, but our path is clear. Just as thousands of Wisconsin families are adjusting their personal budgets, state and local governments must follow suit and begin to live within their means. It's important that everyone understands how we spend the hard-earned dollars of the hard-working men and women of Wisconsin, the taxpayers. Wisconsin ranks sixth among states in the amount of aid provided to local government. This accounts for over 60% of our spending and is a major reason that Wisconsin taxes are higher than those in other states. 16% of spending goes to financial assistance to individuals, such as medical assistance, Wisconsin Works, and student aid. The University of Wisconsin system's share is 9%. Corrections is 8%. And the remaining of state government operations are 7%. This Budget Reform Act refocuses how we spend the taxpayers' money. My solution reflects the core values of every Wisconsin citizen. I won't raise taxes. Taxes are already too high. I will prioritize spending. My family and your family have to live within a budget. So should government. I have three kids. I want to ensure that my children get the best education in the country. That is why education is one of our highest priorities. Growing up in Fond du Lac, my dad was a factory worker, then a letter carrier. My mom worked as a store clerk, then a bank teller. They taught me the importance of being compassionate to our neighbors. Neighbors who may not have been as fortunate as you and me. And that's why my plan protects the neediest of the needy. I'd like to introduce my father and mother who are up here. Would you please stand up? You say, I want to build Wisconsin and provide citizens with good jobs. I want my children, and I want your children, to have a good job too. I want to keep us safe. These are values that I cherish, and these principles should be our guiding light in the days and weeks ahead. Let me start by telling every citizen in Wisconsin what is not in my Budget Reform Act. There will be no tax increase.
I should note here that much of the applause is coming from the Republican side of the aisle. Many Democrats are sitting on their hands.
No sales tax increase, no income tax increase, no property tax increase, no corporate tax increase, no tax increase, period. I will do everything to protect the taxpayer from the big spenders who mistakenly think they can spend without limit the hard-earned dollars of hard-working Wisconsinites. Wisconsin's future is bright, and it's full of opportunity and promise. The hopes and dreams of all of Wisconsin will not be rained on. Wisconsin will not become the number one tax state in the country. Not on my watch, it won't. You know, in this time of economic crisis, we're not going to increase taxes to feed the spending habits. It's time all of government in Wisconsin, all of government in Wisconsin, begins to live within its means. That's exactly what my Budget Reform Act does. I will call for reform, and I will do this with a balanced plan that I lay before you today. I've made substantial cuts to government spending, but there are also a number of essential services that I am declaring off limits for any spending reduction. My priorities are clear. I will fully fund elementary and secondary education. I will fully fund smaller class sizes, school breakfast, and special education. I will fully fund our new senior care program to help our senior citizens pay for their prescription drugs. I will fully fund medical assistance, Badger Care, family care, community aids, and many other programs that directly serve our neediest citizens. Now, Wisconsinites understand that our future is in the hearts and minds of our children. And that's why I will maintain full state support for schools. We will continue to fully fund 2/3 of local school instruction. Wisconsinites are quick to lend a helping hand to the neediest of the needy. That's why I've exempted direct assistance to our most vulnerable citizens. This is exactly the wrong time to reduce funding to programs that provide a safety net for people who can't help themselves. Now, in response to the tragic events of September 11, I will continue to work aggressively to keep our citizens safe. My Budget Reform Act contains a domestic security initiative that will strengthen the state's readiness on many different fronts, including grants to local police and fire departments for their equipment, training, and money for the creation of a statewide trauma system that links the frontline personnel with doctors and medical specialists. September 11th changed our lives in countless ways. Among the important lessons I believe we've all have learned is how we sometimes take for granted the service of our public safety officials. When you talk about domestic security, these men and women serve on the front line. We thank them.
Stand up.
One of the keys to building a stronger economy in Wisconsin is to increase the skill level of Wisconsin's workforce. My Budget Reform Act helps displaced workers and protects ongoing economic development. I urge this legislature to act quickly on an important plan that I outlined earlier this month. That's the emergency 8-week extension of benefits for unemployed workers. In these challenging times, government spending must be reduced in the fairest manner possible. Here's how I will do that. State government operations will absorb the largest share of belt tightening with an 11.5% reduction in spending. Incidentally, the governor's office budget is going to be reduced 16.5%. The Budget Reform Act reduces the Department of Corrections budget by 6%. Now, this is a difficult decision. This is very deep. But I stress that we'll continue to keep Wisconsin safe from the criminals who want to ruin our quality of life. New institutions that were authorized in the past budget will be delayed. While elimination of out-of-state contract beds remain a priority, eliminating the budget deficit must come first. The Budget Reform Act will also reduce the University of Wisconsin and Technical College system budgets by 4.5% each. I don't want these reductions passed on to students, so tuition increases that are already above the 10%, the already approved 10% level, must be passed by the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. The final major spending component is a 4% reduction to local government budgets in calendar 2002. Now, these are tough decisions, but they are manageable. And more importantly, they are the right thing to do. When these are implemented, they will set the stage for an even greater and an even more vibrant state of Wisconsin. Now, my plan does contain a warning, however, because we are reining in spending. You're going to hear a new kind of defeatism from the big spenders who believe government spending can only go up, never down. You've heard the term buyer beware. Well, I offer a slightly different twist. Taxpayer beware. The spenders will make threats of big property tax increases and the elimination of vital local services. But don't be fooled by their rhetoric. Don't let the defeatists defeat you. When you hear the complaints of big spenders, realize that my Budget Reform Act places strict property tax limits on local governments. Spending reductions will not mean property tax increases. Let me repeat, because this is critical. My Budget Reform Act places strict property tax limits on local governments. Spending reductions will not mean property tax increases. And let me say this to the big spenders. If you can't live without your property tax increase, take your case directly to the taxpayers with a referendum. Let the working people decide. When you hear the complaints of the big spenders, recognize that I am not asking local government to do anything different than what state government is expected to do and what families and businesses in this state have been doing for months, and that is live within their means. State government operations budgets are being reduced 11.5%, and we will continue to deliver essential services. Local government budgets are being reduced only a third of what state government is absorbing. They should not have to stop essential services like fire and police protection or garbage collection. To the contrary, this Budget Reform Act includes language that directs local governments to protect the health and safety of our citizens. Every taxpayer fully expects local government to handle these reductions responsibly and to continue to provide essential services. The Budget Reform Act balances the budget for this biennium, but I will not stop there. The budget shortfall allows us to look at costly decisions that we can no longer afford. We must learn from this exercise, or we're going to be right back in a financial predicament next year. So today, I'm forwarding to you a bold plan that completely restructures the state and local financial partnership, a plan that forces a major examination of how local governments are funded, organized, and provide services. Here's what I'm talking about. Within a 10-mile radius of downtown Appleton, there are over 50 units of government, including 3 counties, 4 cities, 5 villages, 8 school districts, and 19 sanitary districts. Who do you suppose is paying for all of this? It's the hardworking families of Appleton and the state of Wisconsin who are footing the bill for this overlap. The Cattle Commission set a stage for changing the state and local government relationship, but many circumstances prevented the commission report from being adopted. The greatest barrier to the Cattle Commission recommendation was little sense of urgency. We just didn't have to do it. We could afford to do everything. We could afford more government. We could afford to be the third highest tax state. We could afford to have too much government. Well, fellow Wisconsinites, we can afford it no more. My Budget Reform Act takes Kettle from debate to action, recommends that we do the following. That we phase out the current shared revenue program over the next 3 years. That we borrow $794 million from tobacco endowment revenues as a bridge only to replace a portion of shared revenue in the transition period. That we establish for the first time a repayment schedule for the tobacco endowment. That we establish within my administration a mandate appeals process for local governments. We'll create a Blue Ribbon Commission on Local Finances to review local government spending, their delivery of services, state mandates, and local revenue sources. The goal is accountability, efficiency, and the best return for the taxpayer dollar. Now, revenues from the sale of tobacco revenue bonds provide a unique opportunity to help in the transition to a new relationship between local government and the citizens they serve. Spenders will say there is no support in their community for cutting local government. If that is your argument, then I ask, is there support for breaking promises to our schools that will result in fewer teachers, larger class sizes, and reduced services for special education? Is there support for turning our backs on your most vulnerable neighbors, the elderly, the disabled, the poor, who covet dignity and independence? Is there support in your community for increasing taxes to feed a government that spends too much as it is? Now, while funds are short, I realize there will be no shortage of critics of the Budget Reform Act. I welcome discussion, but I also say this to the big spenders who want to spend more money. Tell me specifically where you will get that money. A critic without a solution is of no value at all in this debate. My Budget Reform Act is the right thing to do. My Budget Reform Act is fiscally responsible, and more importantly, it is right for the state of Wisconsin. This is a pivotal time in Wisconsin's fiscal history, and I urge this legislature to act quickly and without hesitation for the future of Wisconsin families. There is much work to be done. Join me in being creative, determined, and unafraid to face the critics. Join me in answering the critics who say it can't be done. Join me in protecting the taxpayers, not the big spenders. The people we represent are ready to chart a new course. They want a government that serves them well, not a government that obstructs common sense solutions. They want a government that will validate their trust, not engage in petty politics and spread distrust. I will meet this great challenge. I will reach beyond the commonplace and not fall short for lack of courage. Working together, we will reduce government spending at every level and begin living within our means. We will bring the most sweeping fundamental reform in government structure since Wisconsin became a state. And we will do this without raising taxes. Thank you.
The governor is now making his way out of the room, exiting by a side door, shaking hands as he leaves. The speech was considerably shorter than most of the budget and state of the state messages that were delivered by former Governor Tommy Thompson. Not as much detail in this one. Not as much introducing people in the audience as Governor Thompson usually did. And we'll go on the floor as quickly as we can to get some reaction from legislators to the budget message. As soon as the assembly stands informal. And now we will go out on the floor looking for a reaction to the budget message. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I've just been chased off the floor because they say that it hasn't adjourned. Now we have to wait for the gavel to adjourn.
Adjourn until 10 a.m. on Thursday.
Gentleman from the 38th is asking they have to adjourn the special session until 10 a.m. on Thursday, January 24th. All those in favor will signify
and assembly,
by saying aye. All those opposed, say nay. The ayes clearly have it. The assembly is adjourned.
Okay, now we're adjourned, I guess. Are we adjourned? Oh, okay. Now we're adjourned, and now I can go on the floor. Let me get some reaction immediately here. Spencer Black, the Democratic leader of the assembly, your reaction.
Well, I think this is the rhetoric does not match the reality. This is a plan that was hatched in secret. I want to hear from the local firefighters, the police, the property taxpayers. You know, on one hand, he's saying it won't raise property tax. On the other hand, in communities like Beloit, he's taking away 60% of the budget. Inevitably, that is going to raise property tax. It doesn't add up. You have to wonder who the governor's accountant is, Arthur Anderson.
What about the tobacco securitization and the promise to pay it back?
Well, that's, you know, a lot of people are skeptical about politicians' promises. I think that skepticism is well warranted in this case. Basically, it's like someone who retires and they take 30 years of retirement payment and use it all up in the first year. You know, look at what this does. It takes all of shared revenue essentially away from local governments. For many communities, that's 60% of their budget. And either they're going to have to raise property taxpayers or they're going to have dramatic cuts in services. We're not talking about frills. We're talking about firefighters, police. We're talking about garbage pickup, libraries, and so forth. I think it's essential that we have hearings around the state to hear from firefighters and police officials, local communities, property taxpayers, to see what this means to people at the local level. It's easy to give a rhetorical speech, but you have to have the numbers add up. And as I say, these numbers could only be appreciated by someone like Arthur Anderson.
He says that those services like police and fire and garbage won't have to be cut.
Well, politicians say one thing. I'd like to hear from the firefighters and the police officials. That's why I propose we immediately have hearings around the state on this proposal to hear from the people who fight the fires, who police our streets, who pick up our garbage, to see what this really means. Not the rhetoric here in our nice chamber in the Capitol, but the people, if it ever snows, who have to plow that snow in cold weather.
He also called on critics to come up with their own spending cuts if they don't like the budget.
Well, we certainly will be proposing changes. We've been courteous to the governor and held off doing that for now. Today we're reviewing the governor's speech. And the governor's speech, I believe, has some very nice rhetoric. He delivered it with force. The problem is when you look at the numbers, they just don't add up. I have a concern about taking 30 years of payments from tobacco and using it all up in the first year.
The governor says that he is going to assure that the tobacco money is repaid in the next budget.
Well, this really strikes you as a guy who's got an election in November and is putting the problem off until after November. But, you know, his is his prescription. Take a city like Beloit. 60% of their income, their budget, comes from shared revenue. You take that 60% away, you say no property tax increases, where's the money going to come from? Well, what are they going to cut? It's not just, you know, a small percentage of cuts or consolidating governments, which I think is a good idea, and I think there certainly are economies that could be found there. But the reality is that is going to be devastating to the city of Beloit.
The governor has said that he's not asking local government to do anything that the state isn't already doing.
Well, 60% is more than the state is doing. I mean, obviously we're in tough situations. There's going to have to be economies. There's going to have to be cuts. But I think that this is putting this problem off till after November, taking 30 years of tobacco payments, using them up in the first year, is not fiscally responsible.
Representative Spencer Black, Democrat of Madison, the majority leader of the State Assembly. We're going to make our way over to the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, State Senator Brian Burke of Milwaukee.
What are your thoughts on, you know, basically taking $794 million of tobacco money, paying it back, and there's no requirement, the legislature in the future can't go back and say, we're not going to do it. What do you think of that proposal?
I think it's fundamentally flawed. It adds to the structural deficit. To the extent that the governor proposes to break the state's commitment to local government, what's to keep the state from breaking the commitment to pay back the tobacco loan? There's nothing that prevents a future legislature from simply repealing that commitment.
Now, when this plan first came out, they said if you sell the tobacco payments out, create this endowment fund, and invest it, we'll get more money over 25, 30 years than we would have under the payment plan. By taking away this investment egg, that's not going to happen. What does that do to that plan?
We always said that the governor's projections for the endowment were overly optimistic. This takes away any growth in the endowment because it's essentially loan for state government operations. So you're left with the bare endowment without any real commitment to pay it back and without any growth in the endowment as a result of interest.
You say the governor is breaking faith with local governments. What do you mean by that?
Well, when shared revenue was first adopted, actually the modern form of shared revenue in the early 1970s when it was signed into law by Governor Lucey, the cities, the municipalities across the state gave up property, essentially an exemption for manufacturing properties. The cities agreed to the M&E exemption in exchange for shared revenue. The governor has proposed ending shared revenue while keeping that exemption for machinery, manufacturing, and equipment within municipal boundaries. So the cities are left without shared revenue and without the means to increase their own revenues. In some municipalities across the state, from one-third to one-half of the property is property tax exempt.
What does this mean for Milwaukee? Have you figured it out?
This is devastating for the city of Milwaukee. The city of Milwaukee has, since 1988, not increased property taxes, not increased the mill rate. They've held the line on property tax increases. This will certainly endanger not only general municipal services, but public safety services within the city of Milwaukee.
The governor challenged those who didn't like his budget to come up with their own cuts, will you?
We have a number of cuts. We would like to, for example, I think we should say no to the governor's proposals for new bureaucracies. The governor's proposal, the governor's Department of Electronic Government totally duplicates what the University of Wisconsin is doing. The governor's proposal for a new security czar. We already have a top law enforcement official in the state. It's the Attorney General. The consumer protection issue. Currently, it's split between two departments. We can consolidate that, save $2 million there each and every year, and have better consumer protection for people across the state. There are 100 ideas like that, which we can coalesce on a bipartisan basis.
Thank you very much. Let me get some comments from just one more person, if I could. Senator Bob Jauch, who represents the opposite corner of the state from Milwaukee, the Superior area. What would the governor's budget do to your local governments?
It would create economic collapse in areas like northern Wisconsin. As a matter of fact, when Governor McCallum left, I suggested that he really shouldn't use the Appleton area, an urban area where you have multiple communities, but he ought to use northern Wisconsin, where my Senate district is larger than three states. The fact of the matter is, by eliminating shared revenue and freezing property taxes sounds good, but it results in a collapse of services that are so essential to providing quality of opportunity for those citizens. So for the mayor and city council of Ashland, Wisconsin, and by the way, I think local officials have a legitimate reason to ask Governor McCallum why they are the cause of the state budget crisis and none of the other spending, none of the other agencies or local government schools and others. And number two, why does he continue to refer to local government officials as big spenders when, in fact, they're doing their jobs as elected officials to respond to the legitimate needs of their citizenry?
In most cases, the local governments have held spending down better than the state, haven't they?
Well, I think for the most part, certainly cities have it, in many cases counties have, and this year the lid has come off in some counties because they have held down their levies over past years and haven't really managed well, but they have been very conscious about the property tax. Very frankly, this plan lacks a great deal of credibility. When one looks at its totality, rating there's two things. You can't trust a governor who said 6 months ago, don't touch the tobacco fund, and today is taking the entire $750 million in a scam, suggesting that we're going to pay back this $750 million loan. That looks to me like he was consulting with the Enron officials and coming up with this deal.
Looking ahead, he's also talked about consolidating local governments in the future. We have too many towns, too many villages, et cetera, et cetera. This has been proposed before. Is it politically doable?
Well, I want him to chair the boundary redrawing commission. I don't want him to appoint somebody else. He ought to go into the communities and identify where there is wasteful services, where there's duplication of services. Can there be more efficiency gained in this state from communities working together? Yes, but not to $1 billion degree. He must make the case, and local governments must insist that he point out where there's $1 billion in wasted local governments and why this isn't going to result in eventual property tax increases or unequal opportunities for citizens. One word that was not mentioned throughout his entire speech was equality. He didn't talk about equal opportunity for services, for the opportunity to grow. And basically, he's jettisoning rural, poor communities who will simply not stand a chance of offering their citizens equal opportunity.
Thank you very much. State Senator Bob Jauch, Democrat of Poplar, near Superior in the far north, the opposite side of the state, of course, from Milwaukee. I'm going to try to get some more reaction here from a Republican, and I have to make my way across the floor. There's quite a crowd of people gathered around all of the legislative leaders, and I'm making my way to John Gard, the other co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, a Republican from Peshtigo.
Okay, I mean, that is certainly something that has to be worked through. And I think you can probably pick up today. There's some uncertainty and question about that, but ultimately, we can get through a repayment process and those things if people want to go that direction, I think, fairly easily.
But if I'm on the Tobacco Control Board, can I feel assured that the money's going to be there down the line?
I think so. I mean, I think a number of lawmakers will try and make it have comfort in that. I think in the past when some of the Senate Democrats and some of the Republicans in the legislature used some of it in the last budget, there was no repayment at all. And I think that's what the governor will say. Here they're going to try and make an attempt to say for our long-term ability to eliminate a huge spending obligation of state government, we need a bridge. And the money that they would propose to use would be tobacco. I think I have to meet with a lot of my colleagues and figure out where people are at on that, but certainly that is going to be one of the areas of this that makes people think twice. But ultimately, as the governor said, I mean, nobody else has a plan out there that funds the whole thing. And as soon as they come up with one, then we can have a real debate.
The tobacco securitization loan, isn't that more credit card spending that got us in trouble in the first place?
I think the worst thing is that if it's ongoing spending, and it's not. So the difference here is that you are ending a significant state commitment of billions of dollars, bridging the gap through a budget shortfall of a year, and then eliminating that obligation. So long term, I think a lot of the bond rating agencies and such will say that this is a much better financial position for the state to be in. It eliminates over half of our so-called gap deficit. And I mean, those are kind of boring technical terms, but ultimately you can make a case for this. Whether or not people are prepared to embrace that, time will remain to be seen.
What would this do to your local governments in your district?
It certainly makes things tough, but a lot of families in my state, I mean, I'm littered with companies in northeastern Wisconsin who have laid off lots of people. They certainly have reduced work hours. That means families get a lot less money in their pocket. That's why most of the budget shortfall is related to income tax collections through withholding taxes. A lot of families are doing it less. The state government and local governments are simply going to have to do it less because there is no doubt, there is no will in this body to raise taxes. And I don't even think, quite frankly, most Democrats have the guts to go out and propose a tax increase.
Next step is passing this through the legislature. The last two times the regular budget has been delayed. You've got the houses split. How tough is it going to be?
I think we're up to the challenge. I'm going to try and be optimistic. Senator Burke and I work well together. We're going to try and get it through the Finance Committee. But you know, that is no small task, but certainly it's our job. It's what we're supposed to do. It's what we told the voters we are prepared to do, and I'm ready to go to work.
Thanks very much. Representative John Gard, Republican of Peshtigo, one of the co-chairs of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. When the bill is introduced, it will be referred to the Joint Finance Committee. That wraps up our coverage of the governor's budget review message from the Assembly Chamber of the State Capitol. Our engineer has been Rick Kirkpatrick. I'm John Powell, returning you to our studios.